Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
So good to have you here. It's a very important day, obviously, being 9/11, what sports meant to the healing process that had to begin 18 years ago today. It's significant, the role that sports played, and that's why we want to talk about it a little bit here today as we get into our 5 o'clock hour. Matt Breida joins us in just a little bit. From Youngstown, Ohio. We talked to him earlier, and it was a good conversation. We're going to jog that back for you. Gentlemen, I want to jog your memory back just a little bit, because sports really were an outlier. And, you know, they say that getting back to just normal routines is part of people's healing and grieving process. And I think that sports allowed people to do that day. And if you're on Twitter, if you're on social media, I'm sure you've already seen so many of the leagues sort of come forward with the moments that they thought were proud moments and good moments. I mean, Sammy Sosa coming out with that American flag out to right field at Wrigley. Obviously, George Bush's first pitch, whatever you think of or thought of him as a politician, it was a hell of a first pitch by a guy who, just again, make me feel a little bit normal. Yeah, that was just the first, you know, that was a good moment. The Yankees and Mets wearing the NYFD, NYPD hats. Mike Piazza hitting that go-ahead home run against the Braves. That was something else. Was that Shea Stadium back then, or is it the Citi Field already?
It was Shea, I still believe.
I don't know. No, it was Shea then. Yeah, it was Shea.
Jack Buck's speech at Busch Stadium. You too had an incredibly powerful halftime show. And obviously, when you want to talk about sports' response to that moment, there is no more interesting, tragic, sad, ultimately heartbreaking story to tell than that of Pat Tillman. It's just an amazing moment. I never worked with either of you guys on this anniversary before. Ray, where were you when you saw this moment in history taking place and unfolding?
Home.
Were you up? Or did someone call you and say, you got to get up and turn the TV on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't happen so late in the morning that I'd still be in, so early in the morning that I'd still be in bed. No, I watched it. I wanted to call brief attention to the Russ Ortiz interview, because he said that George Bush made a particular appeal to baseball to resume. And the reason why that happened was because the NFL and college football had already announced that it was not going to go on that weekend, which meant the earliest they were going to resume was like the 23rd or 24th. And baseball could start pretty much whenever they wanted. So they ended up starting again on the 18th, which is why George Bush basically appealed to baseball, because they were the ones that could be flexible about it. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, he did reach out to the sport that, while he liked it, was not at that point the national pastime, not college, not pro, but they were locked in by their schedule. Baseball wasn't, so they could turn things around in about 9 days, which interestingly is about the amount of time that they went dark after the earthquake here, before they resumed the World Series. It's like, it's sort of decided that a week to 10 days is about the time that we start getting itchy for normalcy again after tragedies. And I just found that interesting. Maybe nobody else did, but I did.
Yeah, I was in college. And Southern California, so West Coast time, it was pretty early. The attacks...
North Tower was struck at 8:46 a.m. Eastern.
So that's 5:45 in the morning.
You're before 6 a.m. Yeah.
My first class was 8:20. And I have never really been a morning person. So when I had an 8:20 class, I went straight from bed to class. And, you know, at basically 11 a.m. California, or I'm sorry, 11 a.m. East Coast time, the second tower fell right around there. So this had all happened. And I just woke up like a normal, I think, Tuesday, went to class, sat down just in time because I, you know, my alarm was set for 10 minutes before class started. And, you know, slid into my chair next to a friend of mine just, and this is, of course, like the second week of school or something like, maybe even the first, this might have been the first time we had the class. I can't remember, but I vividly remember the teacher starting the class by saying, obviously, this is an incredibly difficult day, and I don't think any of us really know exactly how to handle it, but I felt like for anyone who showed up, we'd have a class. And I'm sitting there going, what is she talking about?
You don't even know what they're
talking about. I had no idea what she's talking about. So I literally turned to my friend next to me, and she wrote down on a piece of paper, as the teacher was talking, a plane flew into the World Trade Center. And you said earlier, not unlike you, when I first saw that, I was like, because a few years earlier, there had been a bombing at the Trade Center, which was bad, but didn't bring it down, for God's sakes. And so the gravity of what had happened, even then, didn't fully register until I saw the footage later.
Plane hits World Trade Center, to me, the first time I heard that, sounded like
A prop plane.
Some guy going to the Hamptons got it wrong and really made a terrible mistake. And boy, is he going to have a difficult story to tell at the next cocktail party.
Right.
Like, I didn't think it was going to be anything. And then you saw the actual footage on TV. I was on the air at the time. I had to start calling the radio stations that I was doing traffic, sports, and weather for and saying, whatever you're talking about, stop. Because there's something bigger going on. And then the next call that I made when I was done with all my stations was to my dad. And I think I woke up the home because they were back in Indiana and I was on the East Coast. So, you know, it was an hour, 2 hours possibly behind. And I just said, turn on TV. The world as we know it is changing in front of us. And it was obviously a moment that, you know, legit, the earth stood still, I think, for the first time in my life.
The most impactful moment of my life, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you thought of. So look at it this way. I'm not old enough to have gone through the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
I was a child in grade school when the Challenger exploded. And I remember thinking that was a huge deal that polarized and captivated the entire nation. But the tragedy was contained to that moment. You know, this was thinking of the world on a whole new level that no one ever really, not us anyways, here on American soil had to consider. And it was just, it's amazing that we all agree that we work in the toy department of life here in the world of sports. And I think maybe what I hope makes this show relatable to you is that Ray, Matt, and myself know when to tell you something is important, know when to tell you this is all totally disposable and nonsense, and this is the confetti of the party. This is just goofiness. And then there are moments where sports starts to become much more than goofiness. And there are so many people who have told me as I was, you know, belittling my own role in their lives, just the host of a sports talk show, saying that, you know, man, I used to have your show on in the hospital with a parent dying. Like, it was the distraction I needed to get me through a moment. And that happens case by case, person by person moments. I felt like the entire nation needed sports. And people who didn't even like sports turned around and said, you know what, I need sports. And even though I'm not a big football fan, I am watching, and I am watching this baseball game, and I am going to just try to feel normal. And it was a vehicle that allowed me to do that, and I think allowed a lot of you to do that. And whenever we see the goofiness of our lives become less goofy, and there's actual some value to something that we all agree is normally and routinely disposable, it's sad that we have to have tragic moments to get there. But man, that was, it's a girl I went to high school with lost her brother that day in the tower. I know two people who died in the tower that day. And like I said, I was in Connecticut and watching camera crews film parking lots that were full of cars with people who would never, ever get back in it. Never return to their cars, never return to their families ever again. It was just, it was something else.
It was an act of terrorism that I don't think I could have conceived before it happened. It did not occur to me before this happened that it was a possibility.
Well, Pearl Harbor was an attack on soldiers and sailors.
Right.
And this was the first time that really a terror act was aimed at citizens. I mean, ostensibly it was aimed at, quote, the economic machine that, you know, create so much pain around the world for, you know, less well-off countries. But the people who died were not combatants in any way. And I think that's what makes it different than all the others. It's however you want to rationalize it politically. Innocent citizens were killed. The only thing that comes close to it, in fact, is Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Flight 93, obviously, the story that was told there involves the Bay Area greatly with that plane coming to the Bay Area. Rugby players, former Cal rugby players and rugby club players were heroes that day. And just an amazing moment in time, which hopefully no one ever has to go through anything like that ever again in our lives. But it's almost naive to think that something like that won't happen again. And how will we respond? How will we be ready? This is why leaders matter. And man, I don't have anything more to say about that and keep it a sports show. So let's get back to the...
I would add one thing to that, dangerously. What you just said about leadership in that moment reflects the importance of respect for an office from the person holding that office. Because what George Bush was able to do then was be the president for everybody in America. And although many people disagreed with him, by respecting the office, he maintained the ability to be everyone's president when he had to.
Right. The decisions made after the fact, whatever you want to say about that, and there's a ton to say about that, all that criticism is in play. But for a moment, for a night, we did have a leader from the Oval Office, and he took the mound at Yankee Stadium, and he threw a perfect strike, that SOB, and that's why sports can be beautiful sometimes. I want to get back to the fact that we just had ourselves a really good week one. We saw the 49ers open up with a win in Tampa, and now they're in Youngstown, Ohio, as they get ready for a little tete-a-tete, if you will, with the Cincinnati Bengals. Youngstown seems to be on the trip chart whenever they make this trip. It's happened several times now. Jimmy Garoppolo has enjoyed his time in Youngstown.
It's been good. It's been good. Got some good Italian food lately. That's been phenomenal, so that's always good. Got some good ice cream last night. That was fun. So nice. Yeah, Youngstown, it's been nothing but a good time.
Good Italian food. Hey, casadiccio, come se va? What do you think about the ice cream, Jimmy?
I want cookies and cream. on waffle cone. Yeah. Very traditional.
These are important things. We want to know what's going on in that backfield. So we'll stay in the backfield, and that's where we find Matt Breida from Youngstown joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Matt, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Youngstown, Ohio. Is it everything the postcards say it is?
Yes, it is.
Tell us what
to do out here, man.
Tell us what they're doing to occupy your time that isn't football practice and getting ready to beat Cincinnati. I heard you guys all went out to dinner. Jimmy Garoppolo's talking about ice cream cones. I guess that's good team bonding, is it not?
Yeah, man. You know, just trying to do anything to, you know, just take our mind off football and get away a little bit. You know, do some community stuff and, you know, stay active.
That's very cool. Were you among the group of players who went and started visiting some kids in hospitals?
No, I wasn't part of that group, but, you know, I heard they did a great job, and they had a great time doing that. It was a good opportunity for those kids to, you know, get to meet with us and visit us because they're going through tougher things than we are. So that was pretty awesome that we were able to do that.
That is very cool. I'm glad that the 49ers do that. They do a nice job when they stop in Ohio, making this a little bit of a routine on their road trip. They always make some visits to some hospitals. Matt, I got to ask you about the win, and congratulations, by the way, beating Tampa Bay. That was a nice opener.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, we didn't play our best ball, but at the end of the day, you know, we got the win, and that's what this league's all about.
Tevin Coleman goes out with that ankle injury, and that meant additional carries for you. They said in the broadcast that you were dealing with some dehydration issues on that day. What does that mean for you? Did you feel a little weaker or dizzy, or what does dehydration mean for you?
You know, just not getting enough water, you know, normal cramping up and stuff like that. But
cramping.
You know, it was nothing too serious, you know, just, you know, getting back adjusted to that Tampa weather and, you know, came out second half and was fine. So, nothing serious.
In terms of body clock, I mean, Youngstown makes perfect sense, but is there an advantage to being away from home just in terms of getting the extraneous parts of your life just off the calendar for a week? And so that all you are basically is a football player for a week. Is that helpful to you or harmful?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, of course, you know, guys got family. You know, they miss their family. But at the same time, you know, it's just good to get away from all the, you know, outside distractions and just be around your guys and be around football. And, you know, it's kind of almost like it feels like a camp vibe. So, you know, it's pretty cool. And, you know, we're definitely just enjoying each other's company.
As a running back in this league, obviously, you know, it's a dangerous job and perhaps a job that isn't as respected as it used to be or ought to be. And you, as a Niner running back, have had constant reminders with all of the injuries that have happened to this team at that position. Do you do extra stuff to protect yourself as time goes on? Or like, does it change your approach in any way? Not to how you attack a carry, but overall with your fitness?
You know, I feel like, you know, it's football in general. You know, I feel like every position you got to do extra with your body to make sure you stay healthy. I don't really think you think of getting injured too much because, you know, it's football. Mm-hmm. That's the risk that comes with it. I think you know that growing up. And, you know, you just don't think about injury. You know, you just go out there and play. Of course, injury is a part of the game. And, you know, they happen. But, you know, you just try to do as much as you can so you can stay healthy.
Matt Breida here on 95.7 The Game. So when you're on the sidelines and you're watching the defense for the first time in a long time, I think you saw a legitimate pass rush out there. Tell us about what you think that defense did. A couple of turnovers, a couple of touchdowns. Like, didn't happen an awful lot last year, that's for sure.
Nah, I mean, I've been seeing it all camping, you know, all offseason. So I knew those guys would go out there and ball out and have a great game. And they did just that. And I just couldn't wait to see them all on the field at once, and, you know, in a live game. And it was just awesome, man. The way the defense, you know, definitely helped out, you know, the rest of the team. And, you know, just an awesome feeling. And, like I said, there's going to be games where we got to pick them up. So it's a whole team effort, you know, special teams, offense, defense. And those guys did a great job against Tampa Bay.
Without getting into matters of which team is better and which team is worse, how is Cincinnati's run defense different from Tampa's?
You know, I just think they're different in the fact of that just the, you know, just the way they play. You know, definitely their techniques are different. I still think they're very good, you know, up front. They're solid four. They're very solid, just like Tampa was. And, you know, it's going to be another challenge for us this week, you know, running the ball. So we've got to be on our P's and Q's, you know, and bring our best game.
When you watch footage of their game last week, their one-point loss in Seattle kind of gives you a chance to start looking at Seattle a little bit, too, who added Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, you know, we just try to take it one game at a time. Right now, you know, we got Cincinnati this week, so we're not really worried about Seattle right now. We're worried about them when we play them. So just got
good answer. Good answer.
You've lined up next to four different quarterbacks in a two-plus-year career now. Is it that different, or same offense, same job for you, more or less?
You know, obviously, you know, it's different when you know you have, you know, Jimmy in there compared to, you know, CJ, Nick. I feel like those guys do different things. They're all great quarterbacks, but, you know, obviously they're good at, you know, different things. And, you know, just for me, you know, I just focus on, you know, doing my job, doing my role. Whatever they want me to do, I'm going to do. At the end of the day, like I said, this league's about winning, and we just want to win and, you know, get to where you want to go. So as long as we're winning or whatever, everyone's happy.
Matt Breida here on 95.7 The Game. So the Garoppolo first game back from the ACL injury, it's something that everyone just wanted to see. I know he took a hit or two, especially when he was going out of bounds. It's kind of important, right, from a guy bouncing back from an injury to take that one first big NFL hit to know that you can survive it. You went through that.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, just getting the nerves out. And I feel like Jimmy did a great job of that. You know, yeah, he wasn't worried about much. One time, you know, he broke out for a long run and got called back. But just seeing the confidence in him with his knee was great. And I feel like, you know, that didn't bother him at all during the game. So it's going to be a great year for him, I feel like.
Does it feel like the fact that there were so few veterans played, so few downs in the preseason, does it feel like there's more rust than there was a year ago or the year before that? Or does it feel about the same?
I think it feels about the same. You know, I think the first game, you know, you're always going to have your mistakes. You know, guys are finally playing a full game for the first time. You know, preseason, I think the longest starters play is like a half. And, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't play at all. So I think the first game, you know, for every team around the league is just, you know, knocking off the rust and getting everyone back in full game mode. So I feel like, you know, that's what we did. And I feel like we're going to make a big improvement from week one to week two.
It's only your third year in the league, obviously, but over the course of those 3 years, this roster has changed kind of a lot and looks pretty young around you right now. I'd imagine you're looked at as kind of a veteran around these parts. And I just wonder what you feel like is different for you in year three. How have things slowed down or become easier for you? Like, what is the adjustment that you've made as a veteran?
Just knowing how this league works. And like you said, the game slowed down so much for me now. You know, being a third year of, you know, Coach Shanahan's offense definitely helps a lot. You pick up the schemes better. You understand why we're doing things. And, you know, just in general, just makes the game way easier for you. And not only that, but now, you know, I've been through it with going on my third season. So now I can help the young guys, too, tell them what to expect going through their first year. So, you know, just little things like that, you know, definitely make are a big help. And, you know, definitely help me going forward.
I know an awful lot about Tevin Coleman, who went to Indiana, which is my alma mater. It's a guy I've been rooting for since he got in the league. I don't root for guys from Purdue unless I get to know them. Raheem Mostert is now a very important piece of this backfield. Tell us a little bit about the guy that you're going to be sharing carries with this Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I feel like he's always been an important piece. He may not have gotten, you know, as much, you know, carries as, you know, we did, but he's definitely an important piece, you know, of this team. Not only with offense, but special teams too. And he's just a great around overall guy and player. And, you know, I feel like he's going to do big things and open up a lot of eyes the more chances he gets. So definitely, you know, watch out for him.
I know that position groups and position rooms get, you know, there's an awful lot of bond with you guys, especially the bond that you have with Jerick McKinnon, who went to Georgia Southern along with you. How tough has it been for you to watch a guy unable to perform, yet at the same time, every injury he has means more carries for you? It's a weird place to be, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I never ever want to see a guy hurt, especially, you know, one of my brothers. And, you know, I didn't look at it as like, oh, well, you know, this is more carries for me. You know, just me doing my job, you know, whether he was playing or not, you know, I feel like every guy's going to get their opportunity. And it's what you do with those opportunities, whether it be one or 20, you know, you got to make the most of any opportunity that you get. And, you know, it sucks that Jared's not here right now, able to play with us. So, you know, I feel like I'm kind of playing for him because I know how much he wants to be out here with us right now. But at the end of the day, he's going to get healthy. He'll get better. And, you know, we just got to pick up the slack for him.
Do you feel a little empty in weeks when there's nobody on the roster who went to the school that your team is playing? For instance, there's nobody from Minnesota on your roster. So where do you take your bragging rights if you do win Saturday? And I mean, By you, I mean Georgia Southern.
I mean, a win's a win to me at the end of the day, you know what I mean? I guess you take it wherever you want, you know, but at the end of the day, as long as you win, that's all that matters.
You know what you do? You just start barking at all the guys who went to Big Ten schools, starting with Bosa, and then you turn around to McGlinchey and tell him that Notre Dame's afraid to join the Big Ten, and that's why they're still independents.
Well, definitely, man. Nah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there's always rivalries between, you know, small schools and big schools, and, you know, that's one great thing about college football. You know, there's those upsets, you know, because little schools surprise you with the talent they got. So, you know, college football is something else, man.
Well, let me tell you, man, you're from the little school and you got a big heart and you play a big role on this team, especially going into week two in Cincinnati. Thank you very much for joining us, Matt. Appreciate your time. What do you, who do they got you rooming with? You got a roommate or you got your own suite?
Nah, I got your own suite, man. Got your own suite, so I'm lucky enough. But, no, like I said, we're just enjoying each other's company, man. I think it's great that we're all here together. And spending time with each other, like I said, it feels like camp almost. And you feel like you do a lot of bonding. So just awesome to get away from all that outside distraction.
What's the last song you called up on Spotify?
Oh, man. You hit me with a tough one there. I don't even know, man. I don't even know. I've been so locked into football and stuff. I haven't listened to music.
You know what? We'll accept that and even call it a good question, even though you dodged the question. Maybe next maybe next time you get an answer for that one for us. We'll let you off the hook, though, Matt. Thank you very much.
All right, man. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me. Gucci gang.
I mean, that's what I wanted to hear him say. I'm all about the Gooch. It's all I listen to. Full loop. We're going to do that until we reach the playoffs. It's all I care about. Hey, we got an awful lot still around the corner. Don't you go anywhere. We had John Clayton on earlier today. Had plenty to say about the Niners, what they looked like in week one, what he expects to see in week two. A tweet from Rachel Nichols, where she suggests Anthony Davis might be the Lakers' next leader. I don't know about that. And we'll have a most amazing thing, which will not include Christian Yelich at any point in time between now and the end of the year as well. All that's still around the corner. Don't you go anywhere, including open lines, 888-957-9570. Elena, how are you? I got a get-rich-quick scheme. I'm going to trademark the word show. If I trademark the word show, I mean, the Tonight Show is going to owe me money. Every other show on radio and TV that uses the word show. Mr. Show. The video game, The Show.
The Showtime Lakers.
Come on. If I just trademark the word show, which I don't think anyone's really ever used before, think of the money that's waiting for my coffers. Breaking news on LeBron James's Taco Tuesday. It did not go well. The U.S. Patent Office, the U.S. Trademark Office, has refused LeBron James's trademark application for Taco Tuesday. Our long national nightmare has come to an end.
The best part is the explanation. Examining attorney found that phrase was a, quote, commonplace message and can't be protected as a trademark. Yeah, no kidding.
Should have said, examining attorney loves tacos, disagrees wholeheartedly, did research today at a Del Taco and decided that, no, can't go forward.
Examining attorney countersued. In fact, his wife and child came up with Taco Tuesday.
You know, when Edison submitted all that for the light bulb patent, it wasn't like there was some other guy named Sylvania who had already come up with it.
You've chosen a bad example. Because Nikola Tesla would strongly disagree with you. That said,
Nikola didn't get in line fast enough. He didn't have social media. Never saw the Lego movie, which also has an awful lot about Taco Tuesday in it.
Exactly. He was working very hard to be dead at the time, so I'll give him a pass on that. That said, I don't think you can trademark a food name. I don't think you could trademark a day of the week.
Or a restaurant special.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I think the patent office might have given him more false hope because that should have been rejected right there at the desktop.
Yeah, it's very
confusing. I'm sorry, what are you talking about?
Can I give you a dumber one? Can I give you an even dumber one? A more offensive one?
Can certainly try.
You know, when Pat Riley said, I'm going to trademark the word three-peat, okay, I'd never heard it out of anybody's mouth until he said it. And if people are going to start putting that on T-shirts, yeah, you coined the phrase. Go ahead. I'll agree. You probably are owed a nickel every single time. Ohio State tried to trademark the word the isn't the Ohio State University.
Is there a dumber thing in sports than a hard the at the start of your university, wherever you are?
The Matt Kolsky, today on 95.7
The Game. Infuriating.
Wait a minute, that's your Twitter name.
Just the Kolsky, and I did it under protest. I acknowledge it as pretentious and obnoxious.
It could be worse. It could be not the real.
Right. I still want to be at Kolsky. Unfortunately, some dude named Amir Kolsky, who's never tweeted, is squatting on that name, and I don't even know how to go about getting it from him.
How about just go...
Amir, I'm coming for you. Yeah.
How about Ann Kolsky? A.N. Kolsky.
Why?
It's not grammatical, but...
A. Kolsky would have been smart, but I didn't think of that. And it also would have seemed like my first initial was A. It's confusing.
You should have gone
well,
with...
Well, what difference does it make? Don't know who you are by your avatar.
May I suggest you come up with this? And you can go and change this right now. I bet it's available. Taco Tuesday Kolsky. Try Taco Tuesday Kolsky. See if that's working. See if that's available. See if you'll hear from LeBron's attorneys before the end of the day. I don't know anything about Taco Tuesday, but did you see this story that E40 is invested in
yes.
Lumpia?
Yeah, it's great. If you have never had the Lumpia company, I strongly recommend it. My wife works close to there, and I frequently enjoy the results of the Lumpia company.
What I love is that a guy I also know named DJ E-Rock, who is a DJ here in the Bay, based in the Bay, now works all over the country. He's the guy who hooked up E-40 with his buddy, whose mom is Filipino, and had the you know you need it, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, like Lumpia addictive.
Take it to the Lumpia limit.
Yeah, she had the Lumpia limit ready to go. And I love it. I love it when people make investments in local companies.
Yeah.
I really do. Good job, E40. Apparently, this is available.
It's in Oakland.
You can go to a Giants game. This is available.
Oh, wow.
You can go get it inside Oracle Park. You can get the Lumpia, which if you don't know, if you haven't been clued in. By the way, as America debates inclusion and acceptance of foreign cultures, the people who are trying to make the case of more inclusion, the fact that they never pivot to just menu options is amazing to me. You want to talk about where diversity pays off in the world? It pays off at dinner time. It pays off in delicious.
You're not wrong.
Lumpia.
I don't know if this will work because I think in a lot of ways America's a much more hateful place than it used to be. But I wish there were a way to concoct a law whereby if you say something that's anti-Hispanic, you never get to eat their food again.
Right, no tacos.
No tacos, no nothing, no Taco Bell drive, nothing. You're done.
I favor this law.
And just go down the list.
That's great.
If you don't like Asians – all of it. We're just lumping it in as a continent.
No sushi, no
right.
chow mein,
no
nothing.
Lumpia.
Hey, by the way, save room for the dessert lumpia at the Lumpia Company. Because you think, oh, all these delicious savory options, I'm just going to fill myself. But no, save room for the dessert lumpia.
And by the way, when people want to go ahead and start talking about cultural misappropriation, there's no such thing as this culture can't cook that food. And I would like to present to you the best-selling bacon cheeseburger lumpia, which is probably not an original, authentic Filipino recipe.
Guessing but not.
Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah.
By the way, this is why I needed to be on Nutrisystem, because of the lumpia. I love it, though.
It's a poor workman who blames his tools.
You are right about that. Lumpia is the truth, says the text line. You are right. All right, so we told you one Taco Bell story, or excuse me, one LeBron James taco story to tell you another LeBron James talking about defense story. It's actually Anthony Davis who's talking about it. Rachel Nichols tweeted that Anthony Davis says that his stated goal is to win Defensive Player of the Year this season. And you know what? If you're the Lakers, may God have mercy on the league's soul if he decides to go out and do that. And that's exactly what you brought him in for, right? You want him to set that tone. You want him to be that guy. He wants to hold everyone accountable, including LeBron. And Rachel asks, could he do it? Should he do it? Like, is expanding LeBron at this age to more defensive effort in the regular season even worth it for the Lakers?
So to answer those questions in order, should he do it? Doesn't matter. Can he do it? Absolutely not. LeBron decides when LeBron plays defense. Anthony Davis is going to have very little, if any, impact on that. And frankly, I don't know that you care that much. What's more important? 35 minutes of good defense every night of the regular season from LeBron or having him in the playoffs?
I'm not sure that the two things are mutually exclusive.
That's certainly how the league looks at it these days.
But I will say this. If Anthony Davis can pull that off, he is the best player in basketball.
He's an MVP candidate, not a defensive player of the year candidate.
No, he's it. Because when you're the emperor, you don't volunteer to let the prince regent be the emperor until you're dead.
That's right.
So if Anthony Davis is the new leader of the Lakers because he's going to get LeBron James to play defense, he is a force to be reckoned with no matter what happens with his team or any other. He is bad on bad.
He should have stayed in New Orleans and won a title there by himself because you could clearly be able to do that.
I have a baseball factoid for you just for fun because this I think might illustrate the baseball situation more than the home runs in the way we've talked about them today.
Okay, do it, and then we got a most amazing thing, which is also baseball, so it's perfect.
I'm not stealing the most amazing thing, am I, Albie?
No, okay. You are not.
Albie posts little notes to us, and his little note was we're officially 9 home runs away from the MLB record of home runs hit in a season. The record could fall tonight. And I saw that. I looked up. You guys each said one thing. I looked back down, and it says we're officially 7 home runs away from the MLB record of home runs and a hit in a season. It's just, by the time we get to the end of the show, we're going to be 2 home runs away. It's insane what's happening right now.
It's too much.
I've got a fun fact for you.
Mm.
Well, it's not fun. I don't deal in fun. For all the complaining about the Giants don't hit home runs, they're on pace at this point with only 2.5 weeks left to have the 10th most homers in franchise history.
It's all relative.
It is all relative, but...
But that doesn't... It doesn't seem right. It doesn't feel right. It didn't sound right.
Well, but that's why that's why it's anti-fun, which is why I liked it.
There
are also 5 teams that have hit fewer home runs than they have this year, including the White Sox.
It's not just the Miami Marlins 5 times?
No, it's Detroit. Chicago for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's Baltimore. I can't remember the others. I took it off.
But. It feels like Baltimore would be a safe bet there.
They fit that theme. I also just think these home run numbers, the fact that they're bigger than history isn't the problem. The fact that they have dominated everyone's focus to the point where it seems like guys who should go up there with a plan of putting a ball in play are swinging from their heels. And I think that maybe is what, and Ray pointed this out earlier, that could take years to change, but I think baseball's got to start that change because this gets worse from here if they don't do something.
And on that note, here's your most amazing thing. So in a A's and Astros series, it's not even done yet. We have a preposterous set of numbers that I just need to run past you because these things don't happen sometimes, often, in another case, ever. Let's go back further. Monday, the A's lost 15-0. It was their worst loss of the season. It was an embarrassment of early home runs. As a matter of fact, I believe the most amount of home runs ever hit by a single team over the course of the first 2 innings of a 9-inning game in the history of Major League Baseball. So the A's got slobberknockered by the Astros. The next game, the Astros come back to be slobberknockered, or I should say the A's come back and destroy the Houston Astros. The Astros had a plus 35 run differential over 2 games. That's the 4th best run differential over any 2-game span in the modern era since 1900. It's the best by any team in baseball since 1953. The A's then clap back with 21 runs on 25 hits, 6 home runs. Those were all season highs. Second team in the modern era to lose by 15 and then win the next game against the same opponent by 14 or more runs. Chris Davis at his 20th of the season, joining Chapman, Olsen, Simeon, Liriano, Profar, and Canha in the 20 home run club. Only the eighth team in history with seven home run guys on one team. The Dodgers did it just last year. It's insane. The numbers that these two teams put, I don't know if there's any two teams in baseball who could put up numbers like this reminiscent. And then the fact that this is, this should be your American League Championship Series period, end of story right here.
Well,
that'd be cool if it could happen. It
can. And you know, not to, you know, flog the dead horse, but the Astros also beat Seattle 21-2 on Saturday. So they're fine with three touchdown games.
Yesterday the A's took more bases in a single game than they've ever taken in their franchise history.
That's a long time.
I've got a quick update. We are now down to six home runs.
Good God.
Someone in Miami just hit a two-run shot to right. Six home runs to the record. It's going to be over 6,000 on the year.
I mean, it's happening tonight.
Oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
Good God.
It's great.
Is it?
Turn it into a clown car.
Well, it is that. It is indeed that. John Clayton stopped on by earlier today talking about how good the Niners looked. And again, that's a sliding scale when you're playing Tampa.
You probably say the 49ers, but also realizing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are among the worst teams in football. And Jameis Winston was giving gifts up, like mad. It was almost like Christmas in September with the interceptions and the mistakes that were made there. But I think there's more consistency and there's better talent right now on the 49ers.
That was an answer to a question about who's apparent improvement do you believe in more, Niners or Raiders? I thought it was interesting because going in, almost everybody thought the Broncos were a better team than the Buccaneers, right?
I did.
And the Raiders, I would say, overall looked better.
On both sides of the line of scrimmage?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So, I mean, he may be right. And I think both teams are likely to be improved from last year. But I thought it was interesting that he thought the Niners improvements were more real.
He focused on the defensive line.
I think you have to have genuine excitement about the pass rush. You know, Nick Bosa and Dee Ford look great. Of course, it's not a great offensive line the Bucs are using. I don't know if you saw the third preseason game. I mean, it was almost like an open invitation to constantly hit Jameis Winston.
So that was the good news. The bad news is that as good as Richard Sherman was, he's a little physical. And that could draw flags this year.
He uses his hands so well, but then sometimes those hands get caught. But that was what he was taught, and he was probably the best at learning the way to use his hands like that. But that does have a tendency where he's going to get a few more penalties.
And when it comes to hands, yeah, that's a problem at wideout.
You know, the wide receiver position right now is very much in question, and somebody needs to step up. That's why it hurt that Dante Pettis, whatever reason, didn't do too much in the first game, because they basically don't seem to have a good number one.
Five home runs away. Five home runs away from the record now. That didn't even last a minute on the clock.
It's ridiculous.
We went from 9 to 7 to 6 to 5. John Gruden would have to count backwards.
What's the number going to be when it's time to sign off at 5:55?
Yeah. I think it'll be down to 4.
No, we're done at 54. So, I mean, we only have...
Pressure's on. They got two minutes.
2 minutes on the clock for Major League Baseball to hit five home runs. Seems doable.
At this rate, it does not seem crazy.
It seems really doable. It does.
Has any player hit two home runs yet?
It's a good question.
Not tonight. Oh, here's something that you could have bet on. Guess who's already sick of answering questions about Antonio Brown? His name's Tom Brady. He's getting short already with reporters. Asked by a NESN reporter if he had anything to say concerning the reports about Antonio Brown, he responded with a no. Asked if there was a word he'd like to add, he said, "Didn't I just say that word?" Tom's getting snippy. And not just with radio hosts on EEI.
Tom's going home to a house with a boarder who isn't liked by the chief tenant.
Do you think Giselle threw him out last night?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of that's.
I love that you answered that like you were supposed to. You're like, I don't know.
There are. If we're going to draw a line on this story, that's where I want to draw it. At what Giselle thinks. I mean, I know somebody will figure out what it is, but I just don't care.
She may volunteer it, given her history.
I hope so. I hope she says, yeah, Antonio and Tom are over at the courtyard, Foxborough.
Yeah, this was a point that wasn't made enough. When you stay at Tom Brady's house, it's not like staying at my house where I walk past you in the guest room six times just going about my evening business. You're probably in a different wing. I don't imagine they're on top of each other.
It doesn't matter. I think it's a presence issue.
All right, fair enough.
Hey, make your presence felt.
Are we down to four?
Announce your presence. Any more home runs, Albie, that we need to know about?
Nothing to report. Sorry, guys.
Game's dying.
Boy. What a disappointment.
Pitchers' duels everywhere.
Thank you so much to John Clayton for joining us today. Matt Breida, Russ Ortiz, thank you very much. Ray Ratto, Matt Kolsky, Albie, Elena, good stuff all the way around. Appreciate talking to you. We'll have four more hours for you coming up tomorrow. In the meantime, please do remember, sports don't build character. They reveal it.
He's gone.
I want cookies and cream on the... Yeah, waffle cone. Yeah. Pretty traditional.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.